Stein filling in for Mr. Mike Lewis this evening. Happy post-Thanksgiving to everybody. Hey, Shane is on the ones and twos. Papa Frank is out tonight, which means that we simply cannot do the show. I refuse to do the show without Frank Shires present and in attendance, but Shane is going to help me get through it tonight. Shane, how are you doing, sir?
You know what? All in all, things are not too bad for the life of Shane right now. No complaints.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. I actually have a lot of complaints because my Thanksgiving was nothing but a paranoid mess. I decided to have my mom come over for Thanksgiving. I was going to break guidelines. My mom was going to come over, but we were going to try to do it as smart and as controlled as we possibly could. So I said, Mom, bring over two tables. We'll put one table out on the deck. We'll put one table in the house and we'll social distance and we will be very safe. My mom, about 2 days, 3 days before Thanksgiving, says, would you mind if I bring a friend, a random person that I've never met personally? And I go, now my mom knows that I was raised in a Christian household and I have a very difficult time saying no. It's very painful for me to just turn people away outright. So I said, sure, bring your friend, but just make sure you bring the two tables because I don't want to have, you know, any kind of COVID mixing going on. So my mom says, sure. She shows up, lo and behold, she has one table, one single table for me, my roommate, Sarah, my girlfriend, her friend, and her. So that's five people all sitting at the same table. And I thought, how am I possibly going to be able to get around this? Because I'm deeply paranoid about somebody calling the sheriff's department or the police department on my little COVID gathering, because that's what we do in my neck of the woods. I live in North Korea, so we call the Gestapo in on people who are breaking the law. So I said, okay, here's what we'll do. We'll have half of the table outside of the house and half of the table inside of the house. Now, this is automatically ridiculous because now the table is at an angle. So it's basically like we're serving food on a slide, and that's not going to work at all. So we end up just having the whole table inside with the doors to the deck open. Now I'm a just complete paranoid mess because I'm thinking to myself, not only am I not totally COVID safe. I mean, I was as safe as we could be, but now my deck windows are open. So anybody who wants to see us breaking the guidelines can see us. And I was just tense the whole night. I was tense for about an hour. Then my mom left and I got over it. But point being is that I think it's important to be able to improvise in the time of coronavirus. It's important to be able to kind of do a little bit of a jazz maneuver, be able to say, well, how am I going to make sure that I can be as safe for myself and for the people around me? So we did that to the best of our ability. Do I think that anybody that came to my Thanksgiving festivities is going to get COVID-19? I highly doubt it. But for me, when I look at someone like my mom, who's 65, and her friend, who was also 60, there was this weird tension, and I didn't like it. I didn't like having to live in this world where I'm concerned about whether or not this random lady has coronavirus, whether or not I'm going to get coronavirus. Now, admittedly, if I get coronavirus, statistically, I'm not likely to die from it. I'm very likely to have pretty mild symptoms, but my mom is probably, you know, she's up there, 65 years old. She could probably succumb to it. But again, improvising, trying to work it out the best that we can. I think that that's as much as anybody could ever ask for. And, Shane, do me a favor. If you came to my Thanksgiving festivity thing, which you were invited, but you did not come, and that's totally fine.
Yeah, sorry, couldn't
make it. If you came to my Thanksgiving festivities and you saw that my double doors to my deck were open and we had airflow throughout the house and people were wearing masks and people were socially distanced as best they could be, would you feel comfortable or would you feel uncomfortable?
I would feel uncomfortable in the fact that it would just be weird and different, but I would feel comfortable in the fact that you guys are taking those proper precautions.
And that's kind of what the answer that I was hoping for, because I'm beginning to think that all of the restrictions, like we just heard in Los Angeles, they're going to be locking everything down for 3 weeks. I think the best thing that you could hope for is that people have the presence of mind to Be careful and be cautious and be courteous. But according to the numbers that just keep going up and up and up and up, that's not very likely. We're going to get into that later on in the show. Just a reminder, by the way, I'm Jack Stein. I'm filling in for Mr. Mike Lewis. I do this from time to time. They call me up. They say, hey, Jack, you're the best fill-in guy in the business. Would you come fill in for us? And I say, always, of course, always a pleasure to be able to fill in on Cairo. And so what I do to be able to do that is I have my phone set up to give me alerts about whenever anything happens in the fine city of Seattle and the fine state of Washington. I get alerts. Bing! They pop up. And I go, oh no, because the things that have been going on in Washington over the last couple of weeks since I was last on Cairo Nights have not been good. I got an alert just the other day, I believe it was on Monday, that Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin is set to sign a new city budget, cutting the police department's funding by 18%. Over the summer, this was a very big deal. Everyone was talking about, oh, we gotta defund the police, George Floyd, this is all a very big deal. Council member Shawant was trying to say, well, we got to cut it by at least 50%. And other people were saying, well, we got to cut it by 100%. And it's all incredibly ridiculous. And so Mayor Durkin, acquiescing, as she is known to do, buckling, if you will, under the pressure, decided to go ahead with that. And I find that to be nothing short of frustrating. The Seattle City Council voted to further defund Seattle Police on Monday amid debating the 2021 budget. It comes at a time in which numerous incidents of violence occurred over the past few weeks, putting into question the push to reduce the level of Seattle Police during a time of need. Mike Sloan is the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild, and he joined Dory Monson today, had this simple message.
If this trend continues, this time next year, we could see 400 to 500 officers gone from the streets of the city of Seattle. Imagine what crime will be like then.
He went on to say that it is bizarre, nonsensical, but predictable. And of course it is, because if you and I have gone over the statistics of crime in Seattle and King County many, many times on this show. I don't feel the need to rehash it, but anybody with any kind of common sense could look at a city that is of that size and of that level of diversity, and you would say to yourself, that city needs a large, diverse, robust police department. Got a bunch of different language, bunch of different cultural backgrounds, bunch of different ethno-religious backgrounds. You need to have people on the force who are able to deal with those kinds of situations. And over the summer, when they had to lay off the incoming class, which was the most diverse class ever in the history of the Seattle Police Department, when they laid off that class, now what are you left with? It's almost like they're cutting off their nose to spite their face. They're saying, well, we want less police violence, so we get rid of the police. And I can't empathize with it, because I'm of the mind that if something isn't going well in my life, I can either completely cut it out of my life, or I can try to improve it. And I've heard many different arguments as to how we can improve policing, not only in the fine state of Washington, but in the United States as a whole. And the best solution that I've heard of is more training and more money for police. That is the best solution. You have police training. Let's say give them a couple weekends out of the month. They get paid training and they go and they are put in circumstances with, let's say, someone who's having a mental health issue or someone who's having a drug issue or some combination thereof, a domestic violence issue. But if you begin to take away resources from something, it's going to fall apart. Look at the public school system. Would we do that with the public school system? Would we say that the across the United States, test scores dropping even before COVID-19, test scores dropping? What are we going to do next? Well, let's defund it. People say, well, let's just defund. No one would ever have that position ever. No one would say, well, the teachers aren't doing well, so let's get rid of the teachers and let's give them less money. Because it doesn't make any sense. So why do we then do it with police? Well, because police are an easy target. I don't know about you, but every time I've ever gotten pulled over, it's been kind of a bit of a nerve. I'm a nervous guy. I'm kind of a high, high strung guy, kind of an edgy guy. And every time I get pulled over, I don't have anything illegal in my car. I don't have a firearm in my car. I don't have a grenade in my car, but it's not a pleasant experience to have to deal with an officer of the law. It's an authority figure. Now me, I keep my hands at 10 and 2. I say, yes, sir, no, sir. I take the keys out of the ignition. I do the whole nine because I want to make it easier on the officer of the law, because then it's going to be easier on me. And so there's this idea that because it's an unpleasant experience, somehow we need to abolish it, or because there are instances of bad policing, we need to get rid of it. It just doesn't add up. It is not a common sense solution. What it is fundamentally is it's an ability for politicking. It's an opportunity to say, look at how moral I am. Look at how just I am. We're going to defund the police because I care. I'm the one who cares. So if you want to talk about virtue signaling, if you want to talk about the epitome of what it means to be a virtue signaler, I would say that this is probably the high watermark, particularly when Officer Sloan went on to say, this is actually probably the best thing he said. He said, when you have people with no statistical data, with anything to point as far as being what they deem is a solution to for public safety, when they insert social workers into a police problem, you're going to see them being visited by crime. And sadly, a couple days ago, and what you just referenced. So he's talking about a social worker who lost their life. So, yeah, that's what's going to happen. It's not any surprise to me whatsoever that the more resources that you take away from people, specifically the police, the more funding that you take away, the worse it's going to the worse it's just going to get. And Shane, you live downtown still, yeah? You still live in that one neck of the woods that you were telling me about?
Yes, I still live in the lovely Capitol Hill.
Please do me a favor and paint me a picture of what your nightly commute home looks like.
My nightly commute home, I go over the freeway and I cut back into some of the back roads, cross Broadway. It's a pretty basic commute, but I mean, it's still Capitol Hill. There's not much to really go into depth about that. If you know about Capitol Hill, you know what goes on in Capitol Hill.
Exactly my point. You're not seeing families walking around with strollers. You're not seeing a lovely elderly couple walking around holding hands. You're not seeing a nice gentleman tipping his hat with a, what do they call that thing? The monkey that comes out of the box, that the guy who cranks the box and then the monkey comes out and he tips his hat and you put a little bit of change in it.
I haven't heard about that.
You don't know what I'm talking about.
I have no idea.
But you don't see that in that neighborhood. And that's a real shame. Because I don't know of anybody, truly, I've never talked to a single human being that would say, yeah, no, I think defunding the police is a good idea. Even my most liberal of liberal friends, I don't know a single person who would have that idea. So it's a shame for me to have to kind of read those things when I am given the opportunity to come on Cairo Nights. The other thing that is a shame, I will tell you, is that the election drama is continuing. President Trump came out today and he said that he will certainly leave office if he loses the Electoral College vote, but vows that the legal fight is far from over. This just came out and people are acting as if an atom bomb went off, that it's somehow this is huge revelatory news that Donald Trump said, yeah, I'll leave. I mean, he said it the entire time. Here's the actual audio. President Trump told reporters Thursday that he would accept Electoral College results. But now says that President-elect Joe Biden has to prove that he won. Here's CBS's Ben Tracy reporting from the White House.
Before hitting the golf course for the second day in a row, President Trump was already teed off, bizarrely declaring that Joe Biden can only enter the White House as president if he can prove that his ridiculous 80 million votes were not fraudulently or illegally obtained. Twitter immediately flagged the tweet because there is no evidence of widespread fraud.
I'm the president of the United States. Don't ever talk to the president that way.
During the president's combative Thanksgiving news conference, he again refused to concede, warning the Electoral College not to certify Mr. Biden the winner.
So the shame about that audio clip is that if you actually watch the entire clip with President Trump in full context, he gets asked that same question four or five times in a row. Boom, 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 boom. And it's all deeply kind of, it's irritating. I don't know about you, but when someone asks me the same question worded the same way four or five times, I begin to get pretty irritated. And the thing that you have to give President Trump credit for, and nobody ever does, is that he takes all comers. He has not turned down an interview with anybody, even interviews in which he ends up looking pretty silly, like that interview with Jonathan Swan, where he ended up looking not so good because Jonathan Swan is an excellent, excellent interviewer. But he takes all comers, and you have to give him credit for that. And he stands up for himself. And I don't know what more you would really want from a guy in terms of content or presentation. But people are acting as if him saying that, him kind of reaching that point of saying, hey, I'm the president of the United States. Don't talk to me like that. You don't talk to the office of the president of the United States like that. All of a sudden, him getting to that point is, it's a bridge too far. I can't believe he would do such a thing. It's absolutely terrible. It demeans the office of the president. Well, I can understand why he's irritated, because there's new data that has come out from the lawsuit that has been filed, in which Michigan analysts suggest absentee votes were manipulated by a computer, flags hundreds of thousands of ballots. That's the headline. So there are all these, if you heard in that press conference, Trump was basically saying, listen, I will leave. I still think that it's a fraud, and we're going to find out in the next couple of days what's actually going on. Sidney Powell has released lawsuits in Georgia and also in Michigan. They're basically sister lawsuits. I took a little bit of time today to go through each of them. They're almost identical. But a lot of the data within them is based on this idea that there are a tremendous amount of numbers which are just not adding up, and an incredible amount of votes that potentially could be thrown out. Now, if you're curious who collected this data, it was a nonpartisan effort by unpaid citizens and volunteer experts. And so they have come to the conclusion that an audited recount ought to be carried out in Michigan counties that returned voting results that were statistically unlikely, if not impossible. And you might say to yourself, well, how many could there possibly be? To their estimation, they gave this tremendous list of all these numbers that they think could potentially show that the election was fraudulent in some way. I am not sold on that case yet. I have yet to see really hard evidence. I know that there are a lot of people out there that are really chomping at the bit for this election to be called a fraud. I'm still waiting for the election to be, or not, for the results to come out. I'm still waiting for the lawsuits to actually be filed so we can actually see more evidence. I have yet to really see anything that makes me go, oh, wow. That's pretty bad. And if that were the case, if you can imagine, President Trump in that press conference, he's being badgered by people. When are you going to leave? When are you going to leave? When are you going to leave? And he finally pops and he says, hey, I'm working on it. Because keep in mind, when you're in a lawsuit like that, people are talking to you and giving you information that is not publicly available at that time. But the numbers that they are citing from this study, they're saying that there are duplicate voter IDs numbering in the 8,000s, missing ballot IDs, about 35,000 people, missing ballot number, 36,000 people, missing application sent date, 49,000 people. So you can see how this begins to add up and add up and add up. And we're being told, especially by the major media, to kind of move on from this kind of thing. We're being told to just kind of move on to Joe Biden, who's just been kind of going around, and he's putting together his team. And now he's finally getting all the information that he needs. His transition is all underway. But for me as an independent, when I look at this and I say, well, you've got Sidney Powell on one side, you've got Rudy Giuliani on the other side, who's a little nutty, but still, you've got all these people who are working on this thing, and we're being told just to ignore it. And as an adult and as a citizen, I want to see the evidence and I want to see the outcome. I just don't want to sit back and say, well, looks like we're just going to move on from this. You know, we got a couple more things to get to. We're going to get to them in the next segment. We're going to be talking about how late night television used to be funny and is not so much funny anymore. Keith Olbermann also had something to say about all you Trump voters out there. So be prepared to learn once again that Keith Olbermann is a mean, mean man. We're going to take a quick break. I'm Jack Stein. I'm filling in for Mr. Mike Lewis tonight. We'll be right back after this quick break. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I'm Jack Stein, filling in for Mr. Mike Lewis. You know, when I was a kid, I used to sneak into our guest house. We had a little guest house on the side of our house. I would sneak into it, little 13-inch TV, and I would watch Jay Leno, and then I would watch Conan. I was a Leno and a Conan guy. That was my thing when I was like 9 or 10 years old, and I loved it. And those guys were so focused on just trying to be the funniest they could be for the 40-some-odd minutes that they had on television. And I have noticed over the last, I want to say, 4 years, that idea, that legacy that goes back to Johnny Carson and Jack Parr and all those guys, that legacy gone. Because now what we need to do is we need to be the wokest, we need to be the most politically savvy, we need to be the most smarmy that we could possibly be. And that manifested the other night when I watched a clip of Stephen Colbert and President Obama. And I have never seen something that was so awkward and so weird and so just uncomfortable to watch. Here is Stephen Colbert sitting down with the former Commander-in-Chief Barack Obama to discuss our current state and catch up.
Well, President Obama, thank you so much for joining me today.
It is wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's good to see you.
It is good to be seen. I've been seeing you on television, but it's good to see you in person.
That's nice. And that's got to help the demo and some. How old are you? Are you 18 and 54?
I'm not the demographic you're looking for.
Sorry, it doesn't count.
It's too late.
I apologize. It doesn't count.
Michelle says, hey.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.
You know,
good.
You know she loves you.
Well, so. I've really enjoyed spending some time with her over the last 4 years.
I know. And,
yeah.
And she adores you. She thinks the world of you. I think you're okay.
Can we just take a moment? I want to talk. I just want to take a moment to drink you in for just a moment.
Dude.
Because I'm having to get used to looking at a president again. You know, I've gotten out of the habit.
I got to
warm up for Joe Biden. I don't want to pull anything when I see him take the oath of office. You got to ease me into this a little bit.
Joe's going to be great.
Dude, I can't even. That is the most awkward, uncomfortable exchange between two grown men I've ever heard in my life. Did you hear the pauses and they're talking over each other? And then Colbert is just so pleased to be in the presence of our God Emperor, Barack Obama, once again descended from heaven to bless Stephen Colbert on primetime television. Weird. And just the idea that. Okay, let me break it down for you like this. Let me move the curtain away from you for just a little bit. When you work in quote unquote show business, you have a very specific amount of time to get a job done, and you need to get that job done in that amount of time. You got to be funny. You got to be relevant. You got to be topical. And if you're not those things, then you're not doing your job. What I am witnessing here from Stephen Colbert is laziness. I'm witnessing just this kind of total devotion to this dude that's not even really, he's not, when was the last time anybody thought about Barack Obama in a serious way? And he's just gushing over the fact that he's got this guy in front of him, not using him for anything other than, hey, Obama, thanks for being Obama. And I know a lot of people out there are big old fans of Barack Obama. My very good friend, Billy Sunshine, loves Obama more than anything else. And his argument for Obama basically goes like this. He says, would you rather live next to President Barack Obama or Donald Trump? That's his argument to determine your barometer as a person. And I refuse to answer that question every time he poses it to me, because of course everybody would want to live next to Obama because you get to play basketball and hang out, and he's probably worth a whole lot of money and maybe I could borrow some. But the other thing is that we have been in this element for close to, I want to say now, 12 years when it comes to Barack Obama, where he is more of a celebrity now than he was when he was a president. And that's weird. Most presidents, when they're done, they bounce out, they leave. Thank you all very much. Happy to be of service. I'll see you around. We saw that with HW. We saw that with Clinton. We saw that with W. And that has all kind of changed with Barry O. Now Barack has become a celebrity. He is going to dinners. He's got a production company. He's releasing films on Netflix. So we don't really ever get a chance to get away from him. And it creates this weird cultural presence like we see here, where Colbert, I believe he says, let me just sit back and drink you in. I could go off on Barack Obama in terms of his foreign policy about droning women and children. It's disgusting. But Colbert is more than happy to sit there, not ask the guy a difficult question one time for 20 minutes, and just be very thankful that Barack Obama decided to, again, come down from heaven and bless you, Stephen Colbert. Thank you very much for your television time. I appreciate it. And speaking of people who are wasting our time, Keith Olbermann. Keith Olbermann maintains the fact that he is one of the meanest, nastiest human beings to ever live. Here's former MSNBC host Keith Olbermann sounding off against President Trump amid the contentious ballot count following the 2020 presidential election.
We also want as many members as possible of this corrupt, immoral, anti-democratic outgoing administration indicted, arrested, tried, and imprisoned. We want enough of them in there that they can hold reunions and birthday parties. We want the prison so filled with Trumps and Trump flunkies and Trump apologists and Trump enablers that we have to convert Trump buildings into new God Trump prisons.
People often ask me, Jack Stein, you're a political genius. How is it possible that a former reality television star became president of the United States? And I will tell you, because of this, because of people like Keith Olbermann who say things like that about people who just disagreed with Barack Obama on policy and wanted to take the country in a different direction. Now, technically, I would be in one of Keith Olbermann's horrible prisons because you could call me, and rightfully so, a Trump apologist. I'm more than happy to try to give President Trump a little bit of leeway in the decisions that he's made over the last 4 years. Now, some of the decisions, not so much. I will come down on that guy like a ton of bricks. And a lot of the things that he said, I really didn't appreciate. But there are lots of policies out there that I do certainly agree with. For example, restructuring federal sentencing guidelines to bring mass incarceration down. That's a great thing that everybody can agree on, right? Everybody can agree on that. Right to try. Giving people with terminal illnesses the ability to try medications that aren't approved by the FDA. That's amazing. Renegotiating trade deals with Mexican labor unions so that laborers in Mexico have safer working conditions. Wow. What more could you want? But instead, we get Keith Olbermann coming on and telling people that people like me belong in prison, even though I try to be fair and balanced when evaluating a president's worth. And so for the people, let's say now 72 million people who have to sit down and we watch Stephen Colbert just completely fawn over Barack Obama, and then Keith Olbermann comes on and says that you belong in jail, what kind of message are you sending to those 72 million people? Just think about it in your own mind. I don't need to say it out loud, but think about it. Let's just say you are a person who loves Barack Obama, like my good friend Billy Sunshine. And now you're thinking about Keith Olbermann saying, hey, everybody that voted for the other guy, they belong in jail. What does that sound like to you? To me, Jack Stein, that sounds like fascism. To me, that sounds like one of the meanest, nastiest things you could possibly say. Because if I said that about people who voted for Obama, I would be equally mean and nasty, which is why I don't say it. But for some reason, Keith Olbermann gets all this exposure, and he gets all this praise, and he gets all this whatever you want to call it, for being the loudest voice in the room. And that's not, I don't think it's going to cut it in America anymore. I don't think people want it anymore. I think that even if you are, let's say, an Obama-type person, when you hear Keith Olbermann say stuff like that, you shouldn't get a rise out of it. You should be repelled to it in the same way that I'm repelled by Stephen Colbert being blessed by Barack Obama. We got to take a quick break. I'm Jack Stein. Once again, I'm filling in for Mr. Mike Lewis. Always a pleasure to be able to do it. You want to check out my YouTube channel, Human Genius? Two words, little brain insignia, easy to find. I just released a video about an open letter that I sent to Gavin Newsom about the recent COVID restrictions. Give it a watch. It is a fantastic video, if I do say so myself. We will take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I'm Jack Stein. I'm filling in for Mr. Mike Lewis. Shane, I got all heated up about that Keith Olbermann audio clip. I got really irritated by that.
Yeah, you did.
Well, it's just so annoying. It's such a precious thing to be able to broadcast, and it's such a precious thing to be able to go out and give your ideas to thousands, if not millions, of people. And then you have some loser like Keith Olbermann going out there basically playing pretend in his own brain about prisons for Trump supporters. And I just think to myself, what a waste. What a waste of an intellect. What a waste of a mind. Can you play that clip for me one more time? Just real quick. One more time.
also want as many members as possible of this corrupt, immoral, anti-democratic outgoing administration indicted, arrested, tried, and imprisoned. We want enough of them in there that they can hold reunions and birthday parties. We want the prison so filled with Trumps and Trump flunkies and Trump apologists and Trump enablers that we have to convert Trump buildings into new God Trump prisons.
That's the language of a fascist right there. That is the worst kind of human being. And if I could talk to Keith Olbermann, Shane, if he was right in front of me right now, I would ask him, are you doing an Alex Jones right now? Are you playing a character right now? Or what is the thing that you're doing right now? Because you're talking like a fool. You're talking like a madman. And it makes no sense whatsoever that you would come out and do that kind of thing. I mean, it is so disrespectful in so many ways. However, we gotta move on to some good news. You ready to do some good news, Shane? Because I certainly am.
Always am.
There was a guy in Bellevue that just came out the other day. He's a musician reunited with his $40,000 cello that was stolen 3 years ago. And it really is an amazing story. As a musician myself, as someone who's gone through many vintage guitars and vintage instruments, to lose something or to have somebody steal something from you that is that precious is heartbreaking. It's like losing a piece of yourself. I realize that these are just possessions, but a guitar or a cello or a flute or a violin is much different than someone breaking into your house and stealing your TV. And so this guy lost a $40,000 cello. And he gave up on it. He said, you know what, I'm probably not going to get it back. Cashed in his insurance policy. And then on a whim, his next door neighbor decided that he was going to go over to buy a cello from another guy for his classes. And he goes over and he's going to buy this cello. Guy says, hey, I got this really great other cello in the house. Let me bring it out for you. Guy brings it out. Turns out, it's the original owner's cello. So he decided to give it back to him. He said, my soul is worth much more. I would rather be on the side of honesty and make a mistake being honest than defrauding somebody else. And I thought that was such good news that I had to share it. That there are still good people in the world who say, hey, I came across this thing fraudulently. Somebody who stole it, sold it to me potentially. And now I should really give it back. I just think that's such a beautiful gesture. Shane, have you ever had are you an instrument guy, Shane? You play anything? You play guitar?
I am not an instrument guy. I was never good with instruments, but I have sang in two different bands. I got the pipes.
You got it. So imagine, you know, I was never able to sing, right? But let's just imagine that you go through something like The Little Mermaid, where an evil witch steals your ability to sing. And now what are you left with? There was a kind of a darker period in my life where I went without touching a guitar for probably like 2 or 3 years, and I was just done with it. I sold a lot of my equipment. I got rid of it all. I just didn't want anything to do with it. And then my significant other wanted to start learning how to play guitar. And she was like, well, I'm going to go get classes and I'm going to go pay this. And I said, no, let me show you how to do it. And so like the loser at Guitar Center, I took the guitar from her and I was like, let me show you how to use this bad boy. And I started playing again. And then I finally got back into the rhythm of it. I finally started falling back in love with it again. I still hate it. I still, because it's such a difficult thing to do, playing guitar. But now I do it much more than I used to do. And just so people know that if you do have an instrument that is stolen or an instrument that has been, let's say someone broke into a storage unit or anything like that, generally almost every instrument has a serial number on it or some kind of identifying marker. And so if you write that down, you can go to pawn shops or music stores in your immediate area and say, hey, this got stolen from me. Here's what it looks like, or here's the serial number. And what those music stores will do, because this happens a lot, is oftentimes they'll buy that fake guitar from that person, get all their information, get the fingerprints, and then report it to the police, and then you'll get your guitar back. I've seen this happen many, many, many times. So if you have an instrument that you love and you don't want to lose, worried about it getting stolen, keep that serial number, take pictures, make sure you got documentation, and keep it safe. Because I do know quite a few people, particularly in large metropolitan areas, that have had to go through this to try to get back their beloved instruments. I'm Jack Stein. I'm filling in for Mike Lewis. We got to take a really quick break. When we get back, going to be talking all about these COVID restrictions going on, Los Angeles, Twitter coming out, blocking all kinds of information about COVID-19. And also the First Amendment has come up again as a supreme issue in colleges. Take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.